Hello again, everyone. Welcome to No Filter Sports. It is Monday, December 9th, 2019. Eli Zara, Denny McClain back. So much to talk about today, from Lou Whitaker not making the Hall of Fame to Michigan playing Alabama in the Citrus Bowl to more reaction to the Mike Babcock. I'm not so sure about that. We'll discuss that. But before we get into all of that.
Danny, you don't get that, do you? That went right over your head.
Yeah, right over my head. Lots gone over my head the last week.
Well, yeah, it's been a rough week for you. We had the funeral for Sharon on Saturday, and I know the testimonies have been coming in. How you doing, and how the whole weekend go?
The family's holding up. I'm doing the best I can, and it's been a long week. And I just got to thank the thousands, and I mean thousands, of people who sent condolences, the calls, the texts, the emails, flowers. My God, we could start our own flower shop. Thank you. We celebrated her life. Eli was there. He did the opening, and it was just terrific. He set the tone, and everybody loved him. And all of the kids got up there and did their thing, and we celebrated her life. 56 years of incredible tenderness and love and commitment. She really did sign up for better or for worse.
Yes.
That's for sure. I put her through hell. So
we tried not to focus on too much of that.
Yeah. So we move on. It's a new day, and here we go. Rock and roll.
Okay. Well, I think the lead story.
I just don't have anything to add to that other than what I said on the show. We're thinking of your brother. Just
words are never enough.
Whatever you need, whenever you need anybody to talk to, all of us are there for you. So many others are there for you, you know, and we're just so sorry. She was a lovely lady. Yeah.
She really was. And not to digress, but the minister was my first roommate in baseball.
Yeah, Larry Foster.
Larry Foster. And I understand you were an umpire with Larry.
Eli told me that on the phone this morning. We always chat before we do the show. When I was a kid putting my way through college at Michigan State as an umpire, I worked the top league in mid-Michigan, the Lansing City League. We had a whole lot of ex-pro players, big league players, and great college players in that league. And I worked the plate many times with Larry Foster pitching. And somebody told me one day, well, you know, he pitched for the Tigers.
Yeah.
I said, what are you talking about? I don't remember Larry Foster. And he did in 65. I think he pitched two games or one game. So I remember Larry. Great guy.
Yeah. 63.
Okay. Yeah. I remember Larry, great guy. And Eli said to me today that he was a nurse. And he said, wait, I said, did you say Larry Foster?
Yeah.
Wow. I hadn't thought of him in years. And he was your first roommate.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, he tells a story of when he walked in. I got to Washington, D.C. first. We both got called up from different organizations, you know, different minor league teams. And I'd been called up from Duluth, I think it was. And he was called up from somewhere down south with the Tigers. And he came into the room, and I had a six-pack of Pepsi sit there on the table. And he walked in. He said, the only thing I remember about you in that room was you sit there drinking a Pepsi. So, he was a great guy. As a matter of fact, he became a minister within 5 or 10 years after getting out of baseball.
Oh, yeah.
And he was the minister, pastor of a church for like 35 years on the west side of the state.
Of course, before
and those were the days, of course, when you couldn't afford to buy a whole case of Pepsi. Otherwise,
that's right. Six packs.
And me, before I get up there to speak, and I know he was going to introduce me, I said to your grandson, Marky, are the Catholic guys, are they priests, ministers, or reverends? How do I refer to them? I thought they were a priest, but he's actually a reverend. And anyway, and later in the show, we're going to talk to Tom Pachorek, who had his little run-ins with the Catholic Church when he was a young man, but
sure
an incredible.
And they weren't little, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, they weren't little, yes. He did not, it was a tortured youth for him. But anyway, amazing family story, the Pachoreks, 9 members of the immediate family, fathers and sons, because 3 played in the major leagues, Tom, Jim, and John, briefly. There's a new book out about John. We'll talk about that more later. But talk to Tom Pachorek, who also played against all 10 players who are up for this Major League Baseball committee, you know, for the whatever you called it, for the players in the 70s and 80s.
The Veterans Committee.
The Veterans Committee. Mm-hmm. And played against all the guys, including Lou Whitaker, who did not get in, and Ted Simmons, who did get in. And on top of that, this Thursday or Friday, the Ford Frick Award goes to the broadcaster every year, and Ken Harrelson is up this
up
year.
That,
he may get into the Hall of Fame for that.
That's right.
And of course, Pachorek worked with him for 12 years behind the microphone. So
is that the same Ken Harrelson?
Yes.
I ripped a new one on last show we did for excellent reasons. That's the same Ken Harrelson.
Ken Harrelson.
Why did you rip him?
Well, we'll talk about that a little bit later with Tom Petrarch. But Danny, you know yourself, he was the worst, most abrasive, most obnoxious, utter shameless homer who ever broadcast any baseball
game. Bob, that's the nature of broadcasting today.
That's why they loved him.
That's the reason why he was a superstar for the club back there.
There's only one local guy. Now, let's be frank here. I know how they all kiss ass, okay?
Every one of them.
That's the joke. But our guys kiss ass in a way that isn't as colorful or as emotional as Harrelson. The only one who ever came close was George Kell. George would kell, somebody please help Gibby with it. You know, but nobody, you know, Ernie had this calm manner about him, and all others, although they're all shills for the ball club, they never get emotionally engaged in what in the play on the field.
Well, my father-in-law, my father-in-law broadcast for the Cubs for 27 years.
Of course,
They were somewhere in the middle of his career, and the Cubs were just starting to add Sears Roebuck to the show, which was unbelievable because Sears never broadcast anything to do with sports. The first item they were going to broadcast was Braziers.
Oh, really?
And Lou and the other guy who he's doing it with, I think it was Jack Brickhouse at the time, they started laughing. They handed him the Brazier and said, "Lou, just talk about the Brazier." And then Lou said, "Oh, no, I can't do this. I'm a professional major league broadcaster and a former player.
Please.
I can't do this." You know, and so the guy said, "Lou, you get a check on the first and the 15th, right?" He says, "Give me that Brazier."
If I would have been presented with that situation, I would have said, "Well, I'll tell you about this. When I was a teenager, 13 to 16,
they were so hard to get
it
off.
It took me so damn long to figure out how to unhook a Brazier. I couldn't figure it out for years."
Especially when you're trying to reach around those four clips.
To unhook for you guys.
Okay.
I want to say something to Danny here about what he just brought up. Here's what I explained to Eli again earlier today. Those guys did those White Sox games on WGN, the superstation, at a time where Fox Sports, the locals, did not exist.
That's right.
There wasn't a lot going on. So if your team, in my case, obviously the Tigers, anybody around the country, if your team were playing the White Sox, you were subjected to Harrelson's White Sox homerism. For instance, Jack delivers a fastball. It's a three-run homer. And Harrelson goes, "Oh, the good guys just scored three runs against the bad guys. Yeah. Oh, isn't that great, fans?" No, it wasn't great.
It was great.
Detroit, and you're national. You're national. Don't do that.
It was great, because if it wasn't great, he wouldn't have lasted 100 years for God's sakes.
Most people were Sox fans, and that's why he did last.
The commercial people love these guys. They kissed everybody's ass. I mean, they did it the right way at the right time. That was the appropriate way to do it.
Bob is right from the standpoint that it was a national broadcast.
Yeah.
But at the time, he was too young and emotional to understand that this is just how the business works. Maybe turn the sound down and listen to Ernie on the radio. Anyway.
Yeah, you're talking to somebody who grew up with Ernie Harwell and some great pros in Detroit listening to them do games. Ken Harrelson, I assure you, was not like those great pros in Detroit.
Let's see what Tom Petrarch says about him coming up later on.
And, you know, one day I'll tell you about Ernie. We'll have 15 minutes one day about Ernie one day. And we'll talk about how the players felt about Ernie.
Yeah.
About Ernie and his broadcasting, okay?
Okay, we'll talk about that another time.
You know what? That's kind of cryptic. I can't wait to hear this. Yeah, but as Eli says, we're just so busy today.
Yeah, so I talked to Lou for probably an hour on the phone on Friday to invite him on the show today, win or lose. He said, "I'm not going to come on if we lose because I don't want to be sour grapes and talk about it again. We've been talking about the same thing for the last 15 years because I haven't gotten in.
Yeah.
I'd rather not." So then we decided he would be flying right now to San Diego had he gotten in, and then we were going to talk to him on Thursday. So it's the Hall of Fame is a wacky entity. Ted Simmons, I'm sure, belongs. You know, of the others that were Dave Parker.
I would disagree already, and you get so many arguments about all this stuff. But let's start with Lewis. Does he belong or not?
Well, I believe Lou, only 12 players in baseball history have matched Whitaker's advanced metrics at second base, and two of those are still playing. Only second baseman of all time to hit over 200 home runs, along with Joe Morgan. By the way, and here's that you can break it down forever. Harold Baines, who was in this year's class or last year's class, 289, with a WAR, which is a big, remember we talked to Trent about WAR, 38.5. Yeah. Lou's WAR was 75.1, double.
Big time.
So you could easily argue that Lou Whitaker is infinitely more qualified for the Hall of Fame than Harold Baines, but it is an imperfect.
That's not the argument. The argument is he qualified? Are you upset? Do you think a travesty and injustice was done?
I'm not going to call it a travesty, but why is Trammell in and not Lou?
Whole point.
I'll tell you why.
You're right.
You know why. His personality.
Right.
I mean, he didn't treat the writers very well when he played ball. That's all. He just didn't cooperate.
You know,
what goes around comes around in the game of baseball. I guarantee it does.
He liked the writers, and he liked the broadcasters. He didn't like the microphones, and he didn't like being quoted. He didn't like, you know, not that they're from Al Kaline never liked talking about himself.
Right.
Some people aren't uncomfortable talking. They can talk about others, but not themselves. Lou could do that. And so Sparky left him alone. He was his own man. Sparky would say that he would walk by him in the outfield as they were in their shagging ball, say, he'd go, little man, ooh, you're playing so good. And Lou would say, thank you, Skipper. And that was the end of it. That's all they ever talked.
And you know what? In today's game, he may have a better chance of getting in it eventually at a later time, in a sense that they now have professional communicators that work with some of these guys who are going to be on the stand at the end of a ball game. Lou Whitaker was one of those guys who could have been on a stand almost every day. So they work with him. But the other guy who got in, Marvin Miller,
is
a long time coming. This guy is the guy that set this Major League Baseball up, and it was only the owners who kept him out.
Right.
Only the owners. And this man has deserved – you know, I made a comment this morning to somebody doing a show back in Chicago, and I said, the problem is most of these players don't know who Marvin Miller is.
Our own producer, Brandon McAfee, never heard of Marvin Miller, who changed the game.
Changed 100% of the game.
And it all ties together this way, too.
I'm just chomping at the bit here, but you guys go
on. One last thing. Because we mentioned Harrelson. It was when Harrelson was made a free agent in 1967 when Charlie Finley fired him. The results in its hilarious story of some incidents, of some stewardess pinching incidents on a plane.
Right.
And then Harrelson called Charlie Finley a menace to baseball. Finley cut him when he refused to retract the comments publicly. And so Marvin Miller said, This is interesting with the free agency. Then, of course, Kurt Flood followed that, lost his case, and eventually there was free agency.
And I got an hour's worth of stories about Charlie Finley. What a bastard he was.
Anyway.
Now, I got some quick comments
ahead,
on what
please,
you guys
sir.
Are just saying. Number one, there's a reason that they called the combination Trammaker. They were the same player.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't think either belongs in the Hall of Fame, okay, I can see that. You put Tram in, Lou's got to go in. And it's a travesty that he didn't. Put Tram in, Lou has to be there too.
Bob, there's 200 Tommy Johns hanging out there that could be in the Hall of Fame. There's at least 200.
And Jim Cox.
Right. And it doesn't you can't move. I don't think you can move Lou up. He's just got to be in the right place at the right time to get voted in.
He has to go in with Tram or stay out with Tram.
No. It's got nothing to do with going in with each other.
I think both of those sentiments are.
They deserve.
You know, the same reason Harrelson belongs in the Hall of Fame, not as a broadcaster. He's a great story. He's part of the history of the game. Yep. Flamboyant character.
You want Hawk Harrelson in the Hall of Fame as a player?
As a character, not as a. No, he's a terrible.
Eli. This is ridiculous.
I'm saying that because of the story. He's a great, because when you put him in as a broadcaster, now you can tell the whole Hawk Harrelson story.
Oh, yeah.
It's a great story. It's a part of baseball lore, and the guy was a one-of-a-kind player. Lou, part of the story, was how Jim Campbell switched from third to second to put him with Trammell, that they then went on to make more double plays and play more games together than any pair in history. So I agree with you, Bob. It's part of the story. They are inevitably linked, and they should be.
Their career numbers are eerily similar.
They should be, and because of the story. And listen, it's all about story. I don't mean to get you. I don't let anybody in on the secret here. But the only reason we care about sports in the first place is because each day it's a different story with different layers and different elements, and they are part of the story. And that's why I think Harrelson will get in, because he's part of the larger baseball story.
But Harrelson may not get in because of the game itself. He'll get in because of broadcasting, I think.
Yes.
Like Joe Torre. Torre was a much better player than Ken Harrelson ever was.
Sure, of course.
But Joe's in not because of his playing career or his managerial career with the Yankees. He's in with both combined. Now, I want to say another thing. Denny McClain and every other ex-baseball player or current baseball player in the majors owes a humongous debt to Marvin Miller.
Absolutely. Everyone.
Absolutely.
And they love Marvin Miller, and they love what Marvin Miller did for them. Ed Klee, one of our regular listeners from Lansing, Michigan, does not, and what? I don't either. Ed Klee tweeted me the other night. He took his wife down from the Lansing area to one Tigers game last year. They paid $92 each for a ticket, and you can spend a lot more if you want. Then they went ahead, and after the outrageous parking and concession costs, the whole afternoon cost them about $500 for one of 162 games. But somebody's got to help pay for these ridiculous salaries. Who do you think that's going to be? Thank you, Marvin Miller.
You know,
with all due respect.
That's so out of sight.
Bob,
stop.
These guys making $30 million a year and not producing. These guys are multi-gazillionaires.
Bob, have something to
Bob,
have something to drink.
You sound like
you
sound like a relic from the '60s.
Are you kidding?
When they're overpaid at $19,000 a year. Yeah,
Bob, you know
$100,000 for a ball player—that's ridiculous. $100,000.
Bob, you know what I made my first 3 years in the major leagues?
$7,000. You should have made a lot more.
$7,000, $7,500, and $9,500. Try going into into New York or L.A. making $9,500 a year.
Here's what we should do, Bob. Here's what we should do. We should take all the money in baseball, the TV money, and all the ticket money, and we should just give it to charity, and then make sure the players play for $100,000 a year, and the owners don't make big profits.
Right. And so
the TV money all goes to charity. That's what we should do because the reason it's a $10 billion business. Is because of the players on the field.
Right.
Don't you get it?
It's a $10 billion bad business.
And you know what it is?
Stop
and
it.
AAA, which is one notch below, is like a $100,000 business because people want to see the best, will pay for the best, and the best get paid, whether it's a Hollywood movie, whether it's a Netflix movie, or whether it's playing second base for the Tigers.
Here's what I would say to Denny about what he just said, and for that matter, about what you just said. If you're a student of history, as I am.
And I am.
You look at the history of the American labor movement in this country, how the proletariat was completely ripped off, how unions were so desperately needed. And you know what? The rise of unions throughout the 20th century, it got to the point where where the tail was wagging the dog. Unions were desperately needed.
You're out of your mind.
Players to make more money. But now the tail's wagging the bleeping dog.
And the players needed the union,
too. Wait a second.
The next thing you say the union was... Yeah.
We're going to talk to Tom Pachorik, who was drafted in 1960.
Who loves Marvin Miller.
Excuse me. Who was drafted in 19... Let's finish this, okay? Drafted in 1968. Never got to play a minute for the Dodgers. You know why? Because they owned him, and he was an outfielder. Well, they had Willie Davis, and then they brought in Frank. He didn't get to play, and then they switched to a first baseman. He's a minor league player of the year. Did he get to play first base? No, because they got Wes Parker and somebody else. They bring in Steve Garvey. So nowadays, at least if you're an engineer working for a company and somebody else offers you more money, you can go. You have freedom of movement. It was denied in baseball, so the baseball owners asked for this. By being dictatorial and treating players
like union was desperately needed in baseball going back to the 20s and 30s. I repeat what I said, and now the tail's wagging the dog.
Well, you know what, Bob? I'm going to say this. Ed Klee can go to one game a year, and you can watch the other 161 on TV, and it's just as good an experience.
And one thing about
it's better on TV.
It's a lot cheaper too.
It's better on TV than at the ball game, which is, by the way, we have a lot more to do.
Yeah, but one other thing about the union in 1972 when we walked out in 72. First of all, it took a lot of balls to walk out. Right. Everybody walked out. The problem was the only reason we walked back after 10 days was some of the superstars, and I won't name them right now, but some are real obvious, started crossing the picket line, and therefore it was crashing the entire strike. And all we asked for in 72 was a cost of living increase. That's all. And they wound up opening the doors by mistake. And, of course, as they say, the rest today is history.
Hey, Eli, I can sense your answer to go to a commercial, but I just want to mention one more thing to close on this Hall of Fame issue. Don't forget here, let's not be too provincial and just talk about Lou Whitaker or the guys we did mention. Now, Dave Parker got 7 votes, Whitaker and Steve Garvey 6 each. Tommy John, Mattingly, Thurman Munson, and Dale Murphy all got 3 or fewer. Any Hall of Famers there, boys, who should have gotten in?
No, I don't think any of them.
We're going to get into the Hall of Famers later with Tom, because there's a big question to be asked about the future Hall of Famers.
Anyway, gift-giving time is December, yes, but how about giving yourself the gift of 20/20 vision or better in 2020? Only way to do it, have great near and far vision without glasses, contacts, and reading glasses with safe, reliable, state-of-the-art procedures like the ones you get at the Aldo Eye Center. Custom LASIK offered by Dr. Yaldo gives patients better than 20/20 in most cases. Amazing. Multifocal lens exchange for people 45 and over. Forever eliminate the need for reading glasses along with 20/20 or better far vision. If you have a Flex or health savings account that expires at year's end, use it towards the best gift you can give yourself, no matter when you come in for your actual procedure. And as always, the evaluation is free. Get the best, pay the least. Call Dr. Yaldo at 1-800-398-EYES. That's 1-800-398-EYES, or go to YaldoEyeCenter.com.
And Hall Financial, it's a good time of year to go see David Hall. Here we are in December, and mortgage interest rates remain as low as they have been at any point this year. A lot of people may feel like, did I miss the boat? Or refinancing to save some money? The answer is no. Rates remain super low, although the news doesn't report it as much because it's been going on since September. Hall Financial takes a special care of the podcast listeners, too. We all know that. Hall Financial also wants you to have a stress-free holiday. That means lowering your mortgage payment now and maybe even consolidating those credit cards that have rising debt. David Hall sent me these stats over the weekend. Of their last 22 closings, 17 of them were ready to close in 10 days or less. So you can get in there, folks, and get your thing done. Incredible turn times and immediate results. David Hall, 248-308-5000. David Hall, 248-308-5000. NMLS number 1467435.
And you're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. Well, I want to talk about Michigan, Alabama, but maybe we should go for the Lions first. You guys have a choice here?
I got nothing to say. Why would we be talking about the FLs? Why? What's to say?
I got something to say.
Well, you're right. It was a totally predictable, boring,
Totally predictable, boring season with a head coach who's going to be fired at some point in time. Right. What's left to say? Aren't you sick of talking about the FLs?
I am.
I think we're all wrong about him being fired.
Yeah, he's not going to be fired. He's going to be fired someday, but not now. Yeah. In fact, even Mike Zimmer, the Vikings coach, was upset that he said his team, quote, let them score at the end, as if it was the Vikings' choice that the Lions finally got on the board. But I want to listen to so Patricia's been here for 2 years. Quinn has been here for 4 years. So in the third year, the 49ers under John Lynch won 6-10, 4-12. This year, of course, they're among the best. So that's the argument people are making in defense of Patricia. Give him a third year. So he talks about a foundation. This is very interesting, his comments after the game yesterday.
I think they're laying that foundation, understanding that you have to have a foundation before you can build anything on top of it. And that's where we're starting. And from there, we'll try to build some pieces that'll help us kind of maybe get over the hump. You know, what I appreciate about this team is we don't look at our record and say, this is what we are. I think we look at our record and say, that's not what we are. And we got to do better and try to figure out how to get the record to match up with what we are. And that's kind of where we're struggling right now. I think that's the best part.
Yes, he says lay a foundation and that we're not what our record says we are. Of course,
Bill Parcells always said, you are what your record says you are.
I agree.
What a load of crap. Can we move on from
this,
please?
Yes, we can.
Please.
One second. Yes, we can.
Right, here's what Wait a minute.
I got 10 seconds here. Go ahead. You know, I keep hearing about this guy being a student of Belichick. I keep hearing about it. Everybody talking about what a great coach Belichick is. Well, look around, folks. The Patriots this year are not going to win the big kahuna, but they've won plenty, and they've got plenty. But in order for you to be a Belichick team, you got to have Belichick. This guy's not Belichick. I don't care what anybody says. I don't care how many hours of study he took under Belichick. He's not Belichick. And Belichick has a certain creativity during football games, and especially at halftimes, to make the adjustments that are absolutely required and necessary. Nobody else has done that for the last 19 years like Belichick has.
But Belichick was Parcells' assistant for a long time. Everybody's got to get a break somewhere.
Sure.
Matt Patricia deserved this opportunity. And I wouldn't be willing to throw in the towel on him yet
after
2 years, though I think the Giants are going to do that with Pat Shurmur. I want to say this, and Denny gave me a perfect segue into it. Those drunken, shameless creeps who actually booed the great Tom Brady.
Oh, my God. Don't get me going.
Because New England lost to Kansas City on Sunday. Yeah, what have you done for me lately,
Wait a minute.
Brady?
I watched that game. I didn't hear the booing. Maybe I had the sound out.
Well, I read about it. I didn't watch the game. I read about it today.
I heard it. And I got to tell you about Brady. I heard Brady this morning talking about the umpires and the referees. The guy never made an excuse about what happened in that game yesterday. They had two or three calls, horrible calls. I mean, just about
let me tell you what happened.
Yeah,
there was the one drive there where there was a fumble by Travis Kelce. Right. And a Patriot guy picked it up. I don't know if it was Steelmore. It picked it up and took it in, but they blew the whistle. They've learned not to blow the whistle. But they did it, and it cost them a touchdown there. They fight through it. They go down the field. And then the receiver dives into the end zone. It is a touchdown, but they couldn't challenge it. They called him out at the two, and they didn't have a challenge left. They got screwed twice out of a touchdown, settled for a field goal. Terrible.
And my point to this is the things that he said on the radio, if you get a chance, you got to try to pick this up sometime during the day. He was so classy with what he said about the referees and the umps. He said, you know, half goes against you, half goes with you. They make a mistake once in a while, but is that any way to kill them and run them over?
Let me ask you this, terrific. Since you guys apparently watched the game, the big issue is, do you think, in light of his not stellar play this year, do you think Tom is now finally done and should he retire?
I don't think it's his fault. It is not his fault. Right. They have problems with their offensive line. He gets no protection now. He has new receivers he's working with that he isn't on the same page with. He lost Gronk, and he's except for Edelman, kind of new.
Gronk was a much bigger loss than anybody thought.
I think the point to Brady is the problem. He may be problem number six or seven, but I don't think he's the problem.
And I'll tell
you
one other thing I noticed yesterday. Well, last two games I've watched of them in a real dramatic way, too, by the way, because I gambled on both games. And I got to tell you this. The other teams, the three teams that have beat him, they are quicker than the Patriots. All three of those teams were much quicker, and they will beat him again if that's going to happen.
They talked so much during the game about Brady's body language and everything. He knows he doesn't have the tools this year to do it.
He knows.
It's not his fault. He's not going to bitch about it, but you can see the frustration. He doesn't have time to throw. He's got to rush the ball. In fact, he picked up a big first down by running for it, which he doesn't want to do it at that point. Anyway, last thing about the Lions, okay?
Let
me just say this.
Help me.
Now, you're still emotionally engaged with them because you were a big fan as a kid. Me,
I hate the Lions.
Me as a professional.
That's right. You're right. I am. I take it personally.
Me as a professional broadcaster, okay, where we're not supposed to have.
from New York. Cared about the Lions?
I look at the Lions as, I cover them. I look at the fans and I look at the media and I see the response. As I said, they're a sociological experiment to me. And that's what I'm curious at this point. You know, it's never with the Lions fans. Show me. You got to show me before I come back. They always come back. Maybe it's that good old Midwest optimism, which is the opposite of the East Coast, where it's always the worst and we're pessimistic. And even if our team just won the Super Bowl, we suck the next year. That's the way East Coast fans look at it. So in 63 years of losing, will anything change? Is the story this one? Will Lions fans lay down and buy in for year three of the Patricia reign? I'm certain they will.
I'll tell you
that's why there's no risk in not making a move right now.
I'll tell you what's sad. They've had a real good quarterback here for a number of years right now, and they've done nothing with him. They haven't won. They haven't done what everybody expected them to do. That's a shame. They've wasted this kid's whole career.
Yeah, and by the way, there have been which is another reason to dislike them, fined $110,000 for not updating properly the injury status of Stafford. Remember we talked about how pissed off the local writers were? Yep. They fined the team 75, Patricia 25, and Quinn 10, but before that loss to Oakland. He practiced all week. They never put him properly on the injured list, and they've been
You know, why wouldn't they do that? Why wouldn't they just follow the regulations in the league?
Who knows?
So simple.
That's what
you know.
Right. You know,
I'm going to go out in the backyard with my dogs and exercise if you guys don't get off.
We're done. We're done. Okay, go ahead.
You call me when you're done, all right?
Go ahead.
I'll have my cell with me.
By the way, are you back with Mitch Trubisky, who played well this week as the Bears beat the Cowboys?
You want an honest answer?
Yeah.
I think he sucks. I think all of a sudden he's starting to run the ball. I have a little more respect for him now. All of a sudden he figures, well, they won't break my legs. Not yet. But I want to tell you, he's made a little bit of encouragement in my life by watching him run.
Good. By the way,
I still hate him.
Now, Dallas, who they beat on Thursday, is 6-7, and yet may still make the playoffs
yeah.
because of their division.
Isn't that whole division under 500?
Yeah, and they're not.
For those of you who have nothing to do on Monday night, find something instead of tuning in to see my beloved Giants play the Eagles in another horse manure game in that horse manure division that you're right, Dallas is probably going to win.
It seems like the best team in football are the Ravens.
That quarterback is sensational.
And the 49ers New Orleans game was terrific. Did you see the end of that?
Yeah.
Did you see the end of that? About 48 to 46.
Oh, you know what? I've lived in New York so long. I actually watched the Jets Miami, and I lived down here so long in South Florida. I watched the Jets Miami. Shame on me. What a lack of taste.
You know, I got to tell you, I'm going to confess something. Yesterday, I was home alone all day. It was a very long day. And all I did was, somebody smoking a sock in here or something? You smell that?
No.
Anyway, I watched the two football games that were going.
What was that about?
Hang on a minute. I watched both football games.
There's cigarette smokers in the house, and it might have filtered down here.
That's what it is.
That's true, yeah.
So there was two ball games going on at the same time, and I'm watching both of them, one on CBS, one on Fox. And then the other show that was on was, what's his name, Donovan? That show, Donovan?
Ray Donovan. Showtime.
Man, I tell you, that's
Donovan
a great
Leach,
show.
The legendary Scottish boxer.
Wait a second. I found myself doing more of Ray Donovan than I did the other two games.
You'll have plenty of time to binge watch.
I watched 11 straight hours of Ray Donovan.
Wow. Anyway, and one of
Ray's. You know what Denny's from? Because, of course, Denny knew him very well. Denny's from the Charlie Dressin School.
I am.
So, anyway. So in ball four, Jim Boughton's on the team bus, and he's sitting with Charlie Dressin. And Boughton, very studious guy, very bright guy, is reading a book. Charlie Dressin says to him, he says, "What are you doing?" He says, Boughton says, "Well, I'm reading a book." Dressin says to Boughton, "I ain't never read one before."
Now, Bob and I were talking.
Can I tell you about his chili?
You told me about Dressin's chili. Bob and I were talking this morning, and I said, "Bob, there's so much stuff to talk about today. How are we going to get it all in?" I start listening. Then I said, and the heavyweight championship fight. To which Bob said,
"You're not going fight. There now, are you really?
Not. Come on,
go ahead.
Are
tell
you
everybody
kidding
what I
me?
Sucked. The whole thing sucked. Come on.
Wait a minute.
You mean is there going to be one, or was there a quote unquote heavyweight championship?
Andy
fight?
Ruiz, a great immigrant story, a Mexican American, beat Anthony Joshua, who was the heavyweight champion in three separate sanctioning bodies. A great story akin to Buster Douglas upsetting Mike Tyson.
Does he have a baseball card?
So what happens is he was 268 pounds. This is so class. The same thing Buster Douglas did. He got fat after beating Tyson. Suddenly he's a name. He goes in the circuit. And so Ruiz balloons up to 285 pounds and loses. And George Foreman said the other day, love George Foreman,
when
he heard after the weigh-in, he said, "I'm going to tell you exactly what's going to happen. The guy's too heavy. Joshua's going to dance and beat him for 12 rounds." And I'll point out that's exactly what happened. Now there'll be a third fight, whatever.
It's called money.
And by the way, you just heard the difference again between my buddy Mr. Zaret and I and the way we grew up. New York is a huge boxing area.
Huge.
Eli grew up a wacko boxing fan. Other than Joe Louis and much later on Tommy Hearns and Emmanuel Stewart and those guys, I don't remember ever watching a boxing match, and none of my buddies did either when we were kids.
Friday night,
maybe Ali was on TV or something.
No, the Friday night fights were
on. We had no interest, and I still have no interest whatsoever.
Excuse me. The Friday night fights were on. Every night.
No, not
every
when I was a kid. That was
every Friday night.
Was over,
every Friday night.
Every Friday night. Yeah. It's a Friday night fight.
Yeah,
no, but
right.
Instead, you were probably watching Hockey Night in Canada, which we didn't have
on
in the
Saturday,
York.
I sure was.
My,
and you weren't. You were not a hockey guy. It's just, again, that's a big difference between New York and Detroit.
My dad was a huge boxing fan, and every Friday night they would run down to the local VFW in Markham, Illinois, with my mother and my brother, and my mom and dad would put us in the car while they went in and watched the fight.
You have a TV at home?
Oh. We had a TV. For some reason, we couldn't get it. You know, we had rabbit ears back then, and the rabbit ears sucked.
Another off-the-wall story real quick before we
I killed that rabbit, by the way.
Can we like talk about the college football national championship playoff in Michigan and
Go
Michigan
ahead.
State?
Go ahead, Bobby.
Right. That was a lead story that we ignored. You're right.
Yeah.
I'm very as a mission. The one team that I do get emotional about are the Wolverines, and I'm very excited to see this game. Jim Harbaugh's
What?
It's a chance. It's a chance to
Alabama's going to kill them. They're
you don't know that.
The kingdom come.
Excuse me.
Ohio State Redux.
You think Michigan can beat Alabama?
Well, especially when the 10 players are going to be drafted don't play in the game.
Well,
they're all
going to
play
nowadays.
There are nine players listed in the top 100. of NFL draft prospects.
You know, right? Eli, seriously, I haven't seen that. Have a lot of the Alabama kids they haven't said out of this game? I haven't seen that.
No. What Saban, though, says basically that he's not sure who's going to play and who isn't going to play. And he said that I'm sure guys are going to make individual decisions based on their circumstance and their situation. Okay? He says, we have a playoff, and everybody's interested in the playoff. And also the fact that he doesn't think that the game means that much. So he may not.
Doesn't.
He says, because once they made the CFP playoff, the CFP playoff starting 6 years ago, nobody cares about the other bowl games.
Right, nobody.
So he's kind of, you know, looking longingly to the past where the Rose Bowl meant something and the big bowls didn't. They don't have them anymore. So I don't know how seriously Alabama's going to take that game. Then again,
right,
they're
going to briefly.
They could have a chip on their shoulder and they could really want to kick Michigan's ass. I don't know.
But it's always in the interest of equal time, Eli.
Go ahead.
May we go to my now pathetic football program at my alma mater.
Are you already doing
Michigan-Alabama?
Michigan
State is going to play in the Pinstripe Bowl at Yankee Stadium December 27th against Wake Forest. Now, Wake Forest has had a hell of a year, and our buddy, the longtime Major League pitcher and former University of Michigan star pitcher, Larry Sorensen from Detroit, they brought him down because he's friends with the athletic director at Wake to do color on the Wake baseball games. He was so good, and Larry always was terrific with this stuff. They said, why don't you do football? Did you ever play? Larry said, I was a hell of a high school quarterback in Macomb County. So I emailed Larry on Sunday night. I haven't seen Wake Forest this year. I said, well, you know, what's up with Wake? Larry said that they're beat up, but they move the ball really well. They've got 14 players on all conference teams at Wake Forest now. He's excited about watching the game because his grandson lives in Brooklyn, as a matter of fact. So, I mean, you know, Larry says Wake Forest is tremendous.
What's
offensively.
What's their record?
The problems Michigan State has, I think Wake's going to blow them to kingdom come, too.
Are they 6-6 as well, or they do better than that? Do you know what
they're they're better than that. No, they're better than that.
Anyway.
I think they're 8-4, aren't they? Brandon, maybe
Wake
you can check that for us.
There's 41 bowl games. So many that Central's in a bowl terrible. Game, the New Mexico Bowl. Easter is in the Quick Lane Bowl. And Western is in the Serve Pro First Responder Bowl. But I could tell you that the bowl I'm really looking forward to is the Cherubundi Boca Raton Bowl.
I was going to mention that if you didn't, because that's just right down the highway, 35 minutes
that's
from
right.
me. I'm thinking about going.
And what is the
SMU
Florida Atlantic University against SMU?
Are you asking what is a Cherubundi?
Yeah.
Well, the Cherubundi, they need some PR for this. It's a tart cherry juice that has the highest antioxidant strength any of the super fruit juices that you can find on the market.
We're talking about it, and they already achieved their goal, didn't
they? That's exactly right.
Publicity.
Now, the Cheez-It Bowl doesn't quite need, because we've all eaten Cheez-Its in our life. By the way, it used to be the Cactus Bowl. Interestingly enough, that the Citrus Bowl... It used to be
big games.
It used to have four or five different names. I'm trying to think of what they were.
Orange Bowl? Do we still have an Orange Bowl?
Yes,
well, of course we do. Hey, fellas, the best quote ever about the Citrus Bowl is when Johnson, Tennessee native Steve Spurrier, the head coach at Florida, who was beating the devil out of his home state, University of Tennessee, every year, got to the podium in a news conference one time after game and said, you can't spell citrus without UT. You don't remember that?
I do.
Trying to think
now, speaking of Southern ball, I don't see a whole lot of Southern ball myself. I'm busy watching Michigan State. But I would say this, a lot of controversy over whether LSU or Ohio State should have been the number one seed in the national championship tournament. LSU got it behind former Ohio State quarterback, the transfer Joe Burrow, who probably is going to win the Heisman Trophy.
Oh, what a player.
Yeah, he is. So the reason there was so much consternation about this is because all the teams wanted to avoid playing Clemson. Now Ohio State is the second seed, has to play Clemson. But I'll tell you, I haven't seen Clemson, really.
But I've
seen Ohio State play a bunch, and Clemson better be worried about Ohio State. That's what I got
Clemson can play. Clemson can play with anybody. They will not get knocked out of the water.
Yeah.
I mean, they can play.
Yes.
They play a complete professional NFL offense and defense. They are sensational. And how they keep coming up with these kids in South and North Carolina, I don't know.
Although
they do have a big payroll.
By the way, we have much more to do, including Tom Petrarch. But, yes, the Citrus Bowl, in case you're confused, used to be the Tangerine Bowl. Then it became the Citrus. Then it became the Capital One Bowl.
Oh,
and now,
right.
Thankfully, it's again the Citrus Bowl. Anyway,
you haven't even mentioned the game in Detroit down at Ford Field. Who's playing in that game?
Oh, who is playing
the bowl game in Detroit? Who's playing in that game? I don't even know.
Is that the Quick Lane Bowl? No. What's the one downtown called?
I thought MSU was playing in that one. No.
No, they're playing in the Pinstripe Bowl
at New York Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, the New Era Pinstripe
Bowl. Well, Brandon will get that for us too.
How do you qualify when you? What are they? 6-6?
Yeah, bowl.
How do you
qualify
for a bowl?
Six wins. Bowl eligible.
I'm sorry.
And a 500 record.
No one's going to watch the game except unless you go to the school.
Yeah, Quick Lane Bowl be Pitt in Eastern Michigan.
Yeah,
that's right.
And that'll be December 26th.
Eastern gets a home game against Pat Narduzzi, the former Michigan State defensive coordinator in Pitt.
Anyway, it is December, and it's time to get your new car.
It is.
New car for 2020. I got my new car in June, my new Nautilus from Hoot McInerney Star Lincoln.
Beautiful car.
Great car. Fabulous SUV, the first I've ever had. There's many others, too. You can choose from the Nautilus, go a little bigger with the Aviator, bigger than that with the Navigator, tone it down a little bit with the new Corsair, or, of course, the MKC. The SUVs from Hoot McInerney Star Lincoln, sales overall nationally are up 20% for Lincoln, thanks to all these amazing SUVs. Come check them out. I've been loyal to the dealership since the 70s when I met Hoot McInerney. I love his family. They treat all their customers great. In fact, we all get treated the same. It's called the renowned star treatment at Hoot McInerney Star Lincoln. So see the whole lineup of the best American SUVs or buy online with the effortless ownership experience. Just go to starlincoln.com, order your model, features, color, and then roll up. Pick it up at Hoot McInerney Star Lincoln 12 and Telegraph in Southfield. And Luke Nowacki, our personal wealth manager of Pinnacle Wealth Strategies, a loyal sponsor of all the Red Shovel shows. Call Luke at 248-663-4748. Reach out to him. He'll create a plan. He'll give you a complimentary consultation. Then make your decision. Doesn't hurt to go see him. Retirement may be fast approaching. Maybe you're young, just starting a family, and need to balance all the future obligations that you have as life happens. Call Luke at 248-663-4748. Advisory services offered through Royal Alliance Associates, Inc. Other marketing names, product services referenced here, independent of Royal Alliance Associates. And you are listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. All right. Any other bowl games to talk about? You want to talk about the RNL?
Well, no, I want to go to basketball. Can we go to basketball?
Sure.
And I want to go first to Michigan basketball.
Let me quickly name my second favorite. My second favorite bowl game is the Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl. Okay, it's all about the Frosted Flakes. By the way, one cup serving is 14 grams sugar, so I'd be a little careful with that. I never heard of Bad Boy Mowers, but they sponsor that entire ACC, whatever that was, Challenge was down in the Bahamas.
That, yeah.
So Bad Boy Mowers has the Gasparilla Bowl in Tampa, the big UCF Marshall. And let's see. And the Red Box Bowl. We had never heard of the Red Box Bowl until last year. Yeah. Used to be when Michigan State played in it, remember? But the Red Box Bowl in San Francisco, formerly the San Francisco Bowl, then the Emerald Bowl, then the Fight Hunger Bowl, then the Foster Farms Bowl, and now the Red Box. So,
Can we have some respect along with a moment of silence for the greatest bowl of them all, which no longer exists?
What is that?
The Poland Weed Eater Bowl.
Yes, that was the first one.
That was a good one.
In Shreveport, Louisiana. I've never been to Shreveport. I hear it's one of the worst towns in America.
No. Easy. I played ball there for a half a season.
You did. I forgot about that. I did.
I played. My manager was a guy named Phil Cavaretta, who was superstar with the Gus.
Phil Cavaretta.
And I can tell you this. They had two things there. And I played in the month of late June and July.
Cajun food, right?
Not only the Cajun food, but the heat. The two things they had, number one was heat. And I mean serious heat. Despite the fact they put me up at the Holiday Inn, the air conditioning just wasn't well.
Well, that was the best hotel they had in that town.
It was pre-air conditioning, by the way.
And it was brand new, and you had to pay $10 extra a day to use it. Now, but the worst part about being in Shreveport was mosquitoes as big as your hands. I'm telling you, they were worse than Syracuse, New York. And Syracuse has got monster
also
mosquitoes.
Also with a rep, and I've spent time there, of one of the worst towns in America.
Who?
Not to be
Syracuse?
Outdone. Syracuse.
Oh, that's
also
a great,
that rep.
That's a great city.
Oh, I don't know
great
about
people.
That.
Great people.
But at any rate, and then the third one, Denny, that I hear in the same class with these two, and you – I don't think you played there, Evansville, Indiana.
I went in and out of there one time.
I went down and did a story in the Ville once because it was 82. We started the Tigers 82 pregame show, so we needed features. Flew down to Evansville in a plane with no toilet, by the way. That was
my God.
And we had a woman on board who had a problem. And we were going down there. But anyway, What a one-stop light town that was. Because Aurelio Lopez had been sent down, and Marty Castillo was there. There were a couple of guys that we kind of did stories on. But
Tom Underwood spent a lot of time down there. It was the Tigers AAA Farm Club.
And they had a very special promotion that night.
What was it?
Broken Bat Night.
Oh.
They gave away the bats that the players had already broken to fans. Who knows? They probably had 50 broken bats.
Well, one day, sometime in the future, I will tell you a great story about Evansville, Indiana.
We stopped doing this to us. Tell us a story. You've got a great story?
It's just way too early to tell the story.
Oh, and by the way, I forgot that Pat Underwood and his brother Tom, who also pitched in the big leagues, they were actually from Evansville. Yeah,
I got to tell you something.
Number one draft pick of the Tigers, Tom Underwood. Pat Underwood.
In Evansville, they got one of the deepest pits in the world where they take out the rock and the dirt from the bottom of the pit.
Yeah, yeah.
They got to drive it up miles and miles and miles to get it out. Well, there's a great story there that Denny McClain wound up in one time. We'll tell you about it in a month or two.
Anyway,
you promised our listeners three different interesting sounding stories
he'll
today.
He'll forget them halfway through anyway.
One of them is too early anyway.
I see that. I saw James Dolan on the screen there. I know he fired.
Maybe he fired himself finally and sold Madison Square Garden. That idiot.
Did he really?
Can we get to Michigan basketball or not?
Okay, Go ahead.
Okay. What else you got?
Well, I got the Minnesota Twins. Great story.
Jeez, you got too many great stories.
I'm going to tell you, it's a quickie. Let me do a quickie.
Go ahead.
A real quickie. They got this guy, Michael.
What does that have to do with anything?
It does. Twins. Believe me, it does. The irony and the ridiculousness of Major League
Baseball. He's going to tie it in. Go ahead.
It's tied in. Michael Pineda, okay? He's been suspended for 60 days for drugs, okay?
Is he a member of the Twins, by the way?
Of the Twins.
Okay.
They just gave him a brand new contract for $20 million. He's suspended.
Thank you, Marvin Miller.
He's suspended. Shut up for a while.
Thank you, Marvin. Go shave,
for God's sakes.
God, I can't believe.
Well, my got 39 games to go, and they gave him $20 million. You think about what's wrong with baseball? Nothing.
What was he suspended for?
Drugs. He likes drugs.
So he'll stop taking drugs and take the money.
When you did it, it was legal.
But I didn't do performance enhancing. I did performance decreasing drugs. He did performance enhancing drugs. Anyway, I think
he was not using performance enhancing drugs. He was using the other kind.
Bob, you know about the New York. Is it possible that the Knicks could hire a woman? They're saying Becky Hammon is being considered for the Knicks job.
Hammon, everybody's saying
is raves about her.
About you what? What's she going to do?
She's
head coach of the Knicks.
Oh, stop it.
I don't know.
No, she's not going to be.
No.
She's one of the candidates that they've talked about. But I don't think a woman would ever be able to coach an NBA team.
I can think of 1,000 one-liners right now, and I don't like any of them.
Yeah, I know.
Well, keep in mind this. We've discussed this before about some of these women, you know, sportscasters, mic stands who have no business doing what they're doing. But if you look at some of these other women basketball players, whether it was Nancy Lieberman or Carol Blazejowski or any of these people, these were great basketball players who devoted their lives to this game. They are students of the game and they really get it. In the future, a long time in the future, this will probably be a dumb question. Could they ever hire a woman to run a male pro sports team? I think they will. And in this case, that would be very interesting if they did.
There are a lot of women in the front office of teams, so there's
Look at what's his name's daughter with the Lakers.
Yeah, she owns the team.
Yeah.
Well, that's a different matter.
That's a different story.
Well, you know, she could sit back like Mrs. Ford. How is Mrs. Ford, by the way? She could sit back and just do what Mrs. Ford does and just talk about her boys.
But I don't know why everyone is criticizing me. I love our team and I love Patricia. She's so wonderful.
See, if we tee it up once a show, we're okay.
She may think they're 9-3 and not 3-9 for all we know.
By the way, there was one more Minnesota Twins story.
Oh, my God.
Okay.
Anyway,
you guys are going to love this. Alex Avila got a 2-year contract of $4.5 million a year.
Good for him.
I don't know what happened to that guy. Yeah. I have no idea. Well, first of all, he was an all-star catcher.
Yeah, but
he
just
was a 280
listen,
hitter.
Not Bob.
No, he only hit for 1 year.
Bob, only 1 year. That was
I
it.
I know that.
He was not.
I'm asking you, what happened to that guy?
He was never a good hitter. That was his problem, and he only threw out about 25 or 30% of the guys stealing second
base. He's at the Mendoza line.
Huh?
And he has been for a long time.
A lot of good hitters have one bad year, and a lot of bad hitters have one good year.
Yeah.
That's what happened to him.
But he's a good defensive catcher, and
he really is.
Wait a second, he's a nice kid. We got to say goodbye to our radio people. Want to come back?
Why haven't you done the Michigan basketball and Michigan State basketball?
Well,
we've been BSing so much.
We haven't done the Mike Babcock follow up either. But I got to say goodbye to our radio listeners. Thank you for listening. You have been listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. Okay, did you mention the Garrett Cole story? He hasn't been signed yet, but it's been reported in the New York papers that he's offered 7 years, $245 million by the Yankees.
Thank you, Marvin Miller.
Oh, stop it now, will you please?
Okay, so Bob,
It was okay for Frank Sinatra to get $5 million a night, right?
What do you think's a fair salary then for major league players? Yeah. What would you like to see him get paid?
That's an excellent question.
Which you don't have an answer to.
Do you believe that there's any reason – I don't want to come off sounding like a socialist here. Is there any reason why any human being should make more than, say, $10 million a year?
Why not?
Well
– because people are starving. Our fellow human beings are in trouble.
Oh, my goodness.
They can't pay their rent,
Bob,
and they're starved. I don't want to sound like a socialist, Denny.
Bob, please.
You don't do politics, Denny.
Well, you're absolutely right. No one would ever need more than $10 million a year, okay? But – the fact is that you're allowed to make whatever you make in America.
Of course.
The question is, how are you going to be taxed?
So what you're saying is the guy that owns Amazon and all that stuff, he should give everything back.
Well, to tell you the truth, much to their great credit, Bill Gates and Warren Buffett are trying to do just that right now.
Right. Give away half their wealth.
They do the right thing. As long as they hire thousands and thousands of people, they're doing the best they can.
I know the deal. And go check on the condition of Amazon workers, the working conditions there.
Well,
Go read books, as I have, about what working at Amazon and for Amazon is really like.
Well, that story just came out, and be careful with that story because I don't buy it.
No. Well, anyway, let's get off this and get back to sports.
And the fact that Nike makes its sneakers with slave labor, there's all kinds of
things. We can do that.
Course.
We can do 3 hours on that one, too.
Yep.
Yeah.
We're not going to.
So anyway, look, I was begging to talk about college basketball.
Well, go ahead, Bob. We've been waiting for
half your time.
Hour.
Go ahead. What's there to say?
So Michigan bounced back from their abysmal loss at number one ranked Louisville. They beat a tough Iowa team Friday night. I don't know if you guys saw the game.
Yes, I did.
If you follow Big 13 plus Rutgers basketball, you know about Luka Garza. What a great player. 44 Friday night, the most ever scored by an opposing player at Ann Arbor. Mm-hmm. Neither John Teske, though he played well offensively, or anybody else for M had an answer for Garza. But who does? So big, so talented.
What is he, 6'9"? He's 6'9", maybe? He's not a seven footer.
Yeah, he's six. He's not quite as big as John.
6'11".
Now think about this. You know what Michigan has coming up here? Michigan is at Illinois Wednesday night. The same Illinois team that was playing at number 3 Maryland on Saturday got off to a huge lead. The Terps had to storm a big second half comeback and beat him anyway. I don't think Illinois is a great team, but it's on the road in the Big Ten, and Michigan better watch out.
Mm-hmm.
All right, okay. Let's go to Michigan State. I watched last night's game. I guess you guys didn't, Sunday night's game. They really struggled at home versus Rutgers. Rutgers had a one-point lead in this game with 3 minutes left in the first half.
That's what I'm talking about.
And they were down by only two midway through the second half. Yeah. Michigan State is overrated. They've got Oakland in their annual tilt this Saturday, downtown Detroit at LCA.
Yeah.
And I want to mention this, fellas. It's a sensitive subject, but I have to bring it up. Cassius Winston. So many people have said, rightly so, that it is such a tragedy that a great kid and a great player like Cassius is going through what he's going through with the suicide of his brother. But where I draw the line, and Cassius has been good this year, but not great, where I draw the line is when they say his brother's suicide has to be affecting his play. Now, I submit to you that those 40 minutes on the floor a couple times a week are more likely than not his only refuge from the pain feeling.
Absolutely.
Probably the only time he's not thinking about what happened.
Absolutely.
To his brother.
So no however, excuses. No. What you're missing there is saying, sure, that's his refuge. But in all the other hours, the 24 hours a day when he's not playing or has a game,
horrible.
What does it do? How is he eating? How is sleeping?
What's
his family obligations? So it affects the way he plays, Bob, whether it's a refuge or not. So no, it isn't that he should. Go ahead.
Time out. You've gone through hell this past year.
Mm-hmm.
I just went through it. I'm going through it now. And I can tell you, this is a refuge.
big time, isn't it?
This show, you mean?
It really
for you.
Is. Yeah. This show for me, preparing all afternoon yesterday and going through everything and reading everything again, it was great refuge for about 12, 14 hours.
I agree,
hours.
But you can't compare a mental exercise
with a
physical exercise.
You cannot.
Because you could have sat at your table and through your stress of losing your wife, could have eaten 30 pounds of candy, and you could still do a good show. You can't eat 30 pounds of candy and then go out and be Cassius Winston on the floor.
I agree, but they're both the same.
Michigan State.
Yeah, go ahead. She's a refugee, yes, I agree.
I want more to know about Michigan State. I watched Friday night as Duke and Virginia Tech opened their ACC schedule. Virginia Tech came out, and I swear, they triple-teamed Vernon Carey. Every time he got the ball, three guys collapsed right on him. I'm sitting there thinking, why didn't Tom and his staff do that when Michigan State was killed by Duke and East Lansing recently? Now, what happened was in the second half of that game, for whatever reason, Virginia Tech went away from that a little bit, and Duke did come from behind and win it. And I don't care, folks, about that shocking home loss to Stephen F., and you know what that F stands for in this case, Austin. I don't care that every commentator seems to be saying that there's no favorite to win the national championship this year. In my book, there is, and you know who that is, Duke University.
You know what? It seems like Duke University every year is at the top two. Every
best
year.
Program in America.
Yeah. Absolutely. Always has been. Yep. Incredible program.
This Mike Babcock story doesn't go away. Kind of like, it seems to me, and maybe a bad analogy, just like the Harvey Weinstein thing, until somebody outs him, you don't hear all the stories that are piling up. And when Babcock got fired.
That's a bad analogy. I don't like that. But go ahead.
Well, when Babcock got fired on November 20th, that's when Mike Commodore came out and said what he said about whatever Brandon told us about his campaign against him. That's when then Chris Chelios went on the Spit and Chicklet show and told the Franzen story. Then that's when Franzen was interviewed by a Swedish newspaper. So my analogy to Weinstein is that nothing was made public until the first one comes out, and then everything flows from that. It's kind of like the Me Too thing. And so we had Red Berenson on to follow up. And coaches, you know, pretty much say, well, you know, he's a tactical genius. And I didn't know about any of that. And he said, I went to some Babcock, camps or whatever, and thought he was incredible the way he taught the game. And also Ken Holland was asked, and he told TSN also to the effect that Babcock was just another coach and players respond how they respond. And he was not aware of some of the problems.
Do players not like their role, not like the coach, not like who they're playing with? Yeah, I hear that all the time. When I was in Detroit with Mike Babcock, there were some players in that locker room that didn't like the coach. There were some players in that locker room that didn't really have feelings either way. And I know that there's some players in that locker room that thought he's the best coach that they ever played for.
I find that hard to believe. I think Kenny, as much as I like him, is covering his ass on that.
I do, too.
Because if he knew about Babcock allegedly mistreating players, then it would have been incumbent upon him to do something. And as far as a direct quote from Red on our last show goes, I am a big Mike Babcock fan. Mm-hmm. That's what Red Berenson said.
Yeah. Well, a couple things.
Look at his record. Look at his record compared to Jeff Blashill's record and how they're doing this year and last year.
Listen, there's one thing I learned about managers and coaches. They got those jobs for a reason. They've had success in most cases where they've been, and that's the reason they wind up with the big money, big jobs, big contracts. And you know what? Not every player likes every coach. I played for Ted Williams 1 year, and it was worse than being in jail. I'm telling you, that's how bad it was. And I got to tell you something. There are guys in the club that didn't like the trainer. They didn't like the clubhouse men. They didn't like the clubhouse boys. I mean, it's unbelievable how many kinds of hatreds you can develop over a season. And you're with the same people every day. You know, there's a certain intensity that you got to face every day.
Well, Williams never managed again, and my sense is that Babcock is ruined. Now, he has enough money, but I don't think he's ever going to coach again. He's 56 years old, and more stuff comes out.
You want to win? You want to win?
You got to hire him.
Hire Mike Babcock. Yeah. The Wings could do worse, though obviously they're not going to do that.
So you think he'll coach again then?
Oh, absolutely. He's 56 years old. I think Mike Keenan got by the same way. People hated Mike Keenan, and he kept getting job after job because of results.
I agree. And, you know, the other thing is once it's in your blood, Eli, you want to do it again. So like broadcast, and you want to do this, right?
Right. Well, I'm just saying, maybe he's tainted at this point. In fact, Darren McCarty was quoted in the paper, said he got along with him, but and a very strong act. He said it was a current of disrespect. He spared no one. McCarty said he cost us the 2009 Cup that we won and lost in spite of him. He misused Datsuk and he misused Zetterberg. Ego and disrespect for people. So, you know, this is but hey, we'll see.
Every good manager I ever played for, every good coach I ever played for, you could always go and talk to. And even if you disagreed with him, or even if he disagreed with you and told you to go to hell, at least you could talk to him and at least convey what your feelings were.
Well, do you think it's – I don't know whether that's the case with Babcock.
I don't know. I mean, at times it doesn't, but I don't see 10 guys screaming.
I just throw out this. Three of the biggest dicks I ever had the misfortune to be around, interview, and covered were Billy Martin, Earl Weaver, and Whitey Herzog. How'd they do as managers?
Different day and age. It's a different day and age. I don't think we have the tolerance anymore with social media and with whatever else. The stuff gets out. It gets talked about. And a lot of the dirty stuff on those guys never got out like it has on Babcock. Let's do the mailbag. You got anything in the mailbag?
All right, fine. We're going to start with Tom Bell today, writing from Chicago, though he is a Michigan native. And he says, guys, great podcast. Keep up the great content. One observation from last week's Reggie McKenzie interview. Bob was the only one who expressed any outrage that Reggie still talks to OJ. Normally, Bob gets on my nerves with his side steets of trivial mush. Thanks, brother. I appreciate that. But last week, I was proud of Bob's objection. He's a double murderer, quote. He also has tips on other guests, and you guys could address this more than I. John Daly, get him on. Why is he such a hit in Flint, Michigan? I didn't think I knew that.
Yeah, there was something there.
Did he play up there? He may have played in some tournaments up there.
That may have been the
old Buick Open.
You know what I think it was? It's either got something to do with a hot dog or a T-shirt. Because when I read that, the notes before the show, it's something
so.
Tom also says
a great guest for us would be Pat LaFontaine. I love that guy, and he wants to. What's he doing now in the car business? Tom, there is a LaFontaine Toyota in suburban Detroit. Pat's got nothing to do with that. No. He also says, ready, Mr. Z? You guys really should go Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. I'm in favor. I think Mr. McLean might be in favor. I personally think way too much seems to happen on Thursdays that we can't address until the next Monday. A lot of people would be happy if we did a lot of shows, five, but we are too old and decrepit for that, I fear. Mr. Z, are we going to three shows anytime soon?
I think we should keep our personal business, not our business to ourselves. It's a possibility, but I have no immediate plans for that. No.
All right. Here's Rob McLean, who addresses this note to me, I guess, because of my story of owing some $30,000 in government loans when I came out of Michigan State. Eli talked about his loans coming out of Michigan, and Danny, his loans coming out of the School of Hard Knocks. So, right, Danny? So anyway, Rob says he in a very nice big graphic to display how much tuition was at MSU over the years and how I apparently couldn't have owed that much money, saying, if in 1979 a credit hour was $24.50, how in the world did your student get – debt get to $30,000. Well, I just like to say this. Rob doesn't understand, or maybe I did a very poor job of communicating this. I was married with a kid when I was in college. I had to borrow money from the government to eat and keep a very modest roof over our heads. Eli, you weren't married in college, but a lot of us who were did the same thing. We had to borrow money to survive, not just for tuition.
Okay, School of Hard Knocks. Okay.
Well, yeah. Eli's been a multimillionaire for years.
Yeah, right.
Well, he actually has. That's the truth. By the way, you know what? I hope you don't mind if I say this right here.
What?
It's easy for you to sit back on your butt up there in the studio in Detroit being a multimillionaire and getting free tickets for every Tiger game and say, oh, well, Marvin Miller didn't hurt anybody. The average guy working up there in Detroit trying to support his family on $50,000 a year, Marvin Miller's a big deal to him.
Oh,
I rest my case.
You're wrong, Bob.
And I have no comment on any of that.
Go ahead, Bob.
Okay, fine. All right. So here's Mark. I hope I have this name pronounced correctly. Germeroff.
I can't believe that.
Hi, fellas. First, I must offer deepest condolences to Danny and his family after the loss of Sharon.
Thank you.
56 years is a remarkable relationship, and I'm sure there is a huge vacancy in your life now, Danny. I've been a loyal listener since early this year. I find myself looking forward to every new episode. I was a teenager when Eli started out on the radio. I've enjoyed his commentaries ever since. And I was 8 in 1968, so Denny was one of those larger-than-life sports heroes I mentioned. Bob, when I first started listening to you, I found your reference to my beloved Lions as the FLs rather distasteful. But when I realized how many times I used the unabbreviated version of that term while watching Lions games, I decided that the FLs really isn't so bad. Bill Collins on our Red Berenson interview last week. Loved it. My old EMU friend Rick Hellesy and I did the Red Wings fantasy camp in August, and Red coached our team. He could not have been nicer to the guys, and he wanted to win the game at age 79 as much as we did, which we did 6-5. Here's Mike White who tweeted, great interview with Red. Now, here's a proud dad moment for me. My son played for UMass Lowell. Freshman year, they played Michigan at Yost. The goalie was Connor Hellebuck from Michigan, and my son played shutdown defense against Michigan's top line. All three Michigan boys were overlooked by Red. Great win for them, but I love Red. Connor Hellebuck, fellas, Detroit native. He's the starting goaltender and has been for the Winnipeg Jets. Now, he is one of three Michigan natives on the Jets with Andrew Kopp and Kyle Connor, the latter of whom is the third leading scorer for the team. And boys, guess what? Winnipeg has a home and home this week against the horrendous Wings. It begins in Manitoba Tuesday night, and then back in Detroit Thursday night. And I would think that Connor Hellebuck would start that game. I got so much stuff. You know what this? A lot of this stuff is, Danny? This is up to you. It's your call. I have so many notes here from people just expressing their love and sympathy for you and their condolences. If you don't want me to read this stuff specifically now, I do want to mention them by name.
That's fine.
Then I want to thank Mike Vandegenst for writing in. It's a friend of yours, Jimmy Lyons, I think, from Chicago. Yeah. Deepest sympathies
to Danny. Oh, my God, Jimmy Lyons, my second baseman in high school.
Jeez. Yeah, and also very complimentary, as I was to, I will read this, of Eli's incredibly heartfelt and moving tribute to Sharon. You really got a sense from Eli of what an amazing life Sharon and Danny shared, the ups, downs, the joyous times, the struggles. Thank you, Eli and Bob, for that. Danny, I've been
one
lucky
second,
enough.
Bob, no, one you, second, Bob, one second. You did such a great job at the funeral. I'll never be able to thank you enough for what you did, especially on the short notice, because I called you at about 8:30 and told you to get your ass over there by 10.
You were
unbelievable. I've never had so many people say nice things about you before.
So Jimmy Lyons then added.
And you know the kids love you.
Yeah, that was very – I'm happy to help. Go ahead, Bob.
Jimmy Lyons then added. Danny, I've been lucky enough to get to know you through one of your favorite things in life, food. I always knew when Sharon would call in an order to me and leave her last name proudly and happily, McLean. Of course, Danny, you'd be the one picking up the order. I hope you always would leave a few ribs for Sharon at least.
Nice.
We all know you're I guess obviously a restaurant owner. We all know you're lost right now. But Danny, we also I want you to know that in this time you will be back. And you will be getting through this like only you, Danny McLean, can do.
Yeah, and we're here to help you, too.
Thank
okay, anything
I
else?
Want to thank you. I want to thank Doug Titus for, again, his condolences. I want to thank I want to read this. We don't have a lot of time today. I want to read a couple more letters.
We've already got an hour
this.
Over. So
I know that. Bulldog Welding, that's the name of the company where these guys work, tweeted their stuff. Chris Cheryl Hewitson. Another unnamed call. We have unnamed texters and callers. Danny, it's been an
great.
Outpouring,
been
and
great.
I just
thank
wanted
you.
Them to know that you and we thank them for their concern.
And I've read every one of them. I swear to you, I have.
Now it's time for our special guest. Tom Pachorek played 18 years in the major leagues from 1970 to 87 for a bunch of teams, Dodgers, Atlanta, Seattle, on and on it goes. He did kick around a little bit, but that's a testimony to the fact that he was a major league player, and he was a good one. A former minor league player of the year. He was also an all-star in 1981 with Seattle and went on to broadcast for many, many years with Ken Harrelson, who, ironically enough, is up for the Hall of Fame induction, perhaps. And we'll talk to Tom Pachorek about that. But I got to say before we introduce him, when we did that roast for you that you just reminded me of at the poll for that, because Tom Pachorek had to follow the worst roasting performance in history. It was the mayor of Warren, whose name escapes
Jim Fouts.
And he gets up there and reads 3 minutes of the most boring, unfunny stuff. And so I'm looking at Tom Pachorek because he's up next, and I'm kind of rolling my eyes like, what are you going to do? So Pachorek comes up, and his first line to this audience that was already half asleep, he goes, wow, how do you follow that act? And I was hilarious.
That's like following Sinatra, isn't it? I think it was a little bit of different. I think there was a little bit of a cuss word in there in the middle. When they asked you to come up here to speak tonight, Jim, why didn't you tell them to go, themselves?
Yeah, I think the second word started with an F.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's talk about your family a little bit. Two of your brothers played in the major leagues, although briefly, and your oldest brother, John, I think, has a book coming out. He holds the major league record for the best batting average of all time. He was 3-for-3 and got on base 5 times in his 1 game with the Astros. Talk about your incredible family. 9 in all play professional baseball, including his...
from Hamtramck, Michigan, yep, which we haven't even mentioned yet.
Well, we were lucky. We just didn't want to work in the factory like my dad did for 50 years, you know. So that was a great out for us to get to school somehow or either sign a contract. But my brother John was really a shame because he was a great athlete. He went to St. Lads in Hamtramck, by the way. And he signed with the Houston Colt 45s and played in 1 game, the last game of the 1963 season. And ironically, they called up all their future stars that they anticipated being great players. And some of those were Jimmy Winn, Joe Morgan, Rusty Staub, John Bateman, just to name a few. And, so my brother was the star of the game. He went 3-for-3 with 3 RBIs.
Pull the dog closer to the mic. Okay?
Would you quit kicking your dog?
Don't hurt the dog.
There's 3 of them. There's not just.
Are they disagreeing with Bob right now? Or?
Can you guys hold on 1 second?
Sure. Well,
and... All right. Well done.
Let's get back to.
Tommy.
Now, why did he only play 1 game? It was an amazing game. How come he was only 18 years old? You mentioned all the greats that went on. What happened to him? In fact, Rusty Staub, who you mentioned, said he has never seen a better athlete than John Pachorek. What happened?
Well, he had a spinal fusion back when they really didn't perfect the art. He had a great lower back pain. You know, he was one of those exercise nuts. You might compare him to some guys today that overworked their muscles. He was just freakish when it came to that sort of thing, and he overdid the exercise program, tore his back muscles, and as a result had the spinal fusion that really wasn't effective for him. So he was stiff the rest of his life. He tried to make a comeback in the minor leagues, but he never got back to the big leagues. So that's pretty much the story. You know, we should all be built like Rusty Staub, who was a great guy, a great teammate. Remember Rusty? He didn't have an ounce of muscle in his body, but he could flat hit.
He could hit.
When we had him in Detroit, Tommy, I will never forget the time, and I loved Rusty, and I knew him well. I'll never forget the time I saw him walking around the Tigers locker room, completely nude,
except for
a pair of black boots that went up about 14 inches
patent leather.
On his ankles.
Patent leather. And back then, we never put 2 and 2 together.
Rusty was never a model for Chippendales, you know.
What a good guy, though.
And he was, he could hit, though. And Jimmy Winn was in that same group, and Joe Morgan. So it's amazing. The guys and John Bateman were also involved in that game. So that was a pretty big thrill for my brother. And it's too bad, but I don't know if that record's ever going to be eclipsed, but he wish he had a chance to do so. My brother Jim had a good career in Japan. He was an All-American at the University of Michigan, and then he played 6 years in Japan. He even won a batting title there. So Jimbo did well for himself, too.
What kind of money did he make in Japan?
Well, yeah, a lot more than I made here, or you made, Denny.
That's for sure.
I think he got up to about $1 million a
year. Oh, my God.
Back in the 80s and 90s, that's pretty good.
I think I could have fooled the Japanese in the 80s.
I started hearing about your brother Jim when he was in high school at Orchard Lake St. Mary's, and what a great football and baseball player he was. So I go out to practice one day. I want to see for myself what this kid looks like. It was like Wilt Chamberlain in a group of pygmies. He just towered over everybody on that team, and he did have a hell of a career.
Now he's ripping pygmies.
He was I think he got the Hertz Award as this outstanding high school football player in the country, and he had that big old statue with he and a picture on it with him and O.J. Simpson of all people. And he went to Michigan thinking that he was going to play quarterback. And Bo Schembechler said, you know, we're going to move Rick Leach to running back. And that didn't materialize. So Jimbo stuck to baseball and had a good career doing that.
You know, we were talking earlier before you came on about, you know, Ted Simmons getting in and Lou Whitaker not and Marvin Miller. And Bob went into this very ridiculous rave about how Marvin Miller.
In your opinion, now you're talking to a player and asking him how he feels about Marvin.
I
what the hell was I, chap liver?
Well, I said. I said, Tom, that you're a perfect example of why Marvin Miller.
You already made your feelings well known, Denny.
Excuse me. Tom Pachorek was drafted in 1968 by the Dodgers. They continually had players in left field like Willie Crawford and Willie Davis who were ahead of him. They moved him to first, and there's Steve Garvey and Wes Parker. He had no freedom to go pursue your career somewhere else.
Right.
Marvin Miller, I think, is more qualified than as anybody in the Hall of Fame right now. And Bob wants to poo-poo because he thinks players make too much money. What are your thoughts about Marvin Miller?
Well, I think players right now make too much money. We didn't back then, though.
Thank you.
And I think Marvin justifiably, I wish he would have gotten in there when he was still alive.
Me too.
Because Marvin Miller turned everything around. You know, I don't know what you made, Denny, your first year in the big leagues. But
$7,000.
I think that was about $8,000. How much?
I made $7,000 the first year, $7,500 the second, and $9,500 the third year.
Yeah, and now these guys, they've got the minimum up to over $500,000,
yep.
And they've got four gourmet meals every day they have,
right.
and flying charter flights all over the country. I mean, it's phenomenal, and that, to me, comes from Marvin Miller. They had to have a business type guy, not a baseball guy to come in, a guy that knew how to handle unions and people and to represent them properly. And Marvin Miller had to be the greatest pick that, I don't know if it was luck or whatever,
no.
But it was amazing. Because even Walter O'Malley, we took a vote back then about striking, and he said, you better stick together as a union. And he got rid of guys that voted against the strike.
Oh, was that right?
That's how powerful Marvin was, yeah.
Well, I know one thing, that when we picked Marvin, you know, he had just left the union for the steel companies. And he had put all of that together, made the steel companies much more valuable as far as the union went. And then when he joined us, magic things happened immediately. When we walked out, you remember when we walked out in 72?
Yes.
Okay. That was, and the thing that we were talking about earlier today was I panicked a little bit, and I was an assistant rep in Oakland at the time, but I was scared to death that all of a sudden we had superstars crossing the line coming back. And then, boy, was I pissed. And I'm not going to name them today because most of them are, I don't even know if they're still with us. But, boy, I tell you, I got so damn mad. These guys, in fact, two of them were on our club. And I called them both, and I said, what the hell is wrong with you? And but you may remember, the only thing we wanted was a 4% increase in the cost of living. That's all we were asking for.
Isn't that amazing? And, yeah, they were adamant they weren't going to. It was for Marvin. I remember what I was with the in the minor league, so I didn't really feel the effect of that.
Sure.
And you guys went out. The major league guys were the ones that felt the brunt of what was going to happen to them. But I felt the benefits even back then in 72.
Yeah, things did get better.
You played against every one of the 10 guys that was up. You played against Thurman Munson, Mattingly, Tommy John, Simmons, Whitaker, Dwight Evans, Steve Garvey, Dale Murphy, Dave Parker. You saw them all. Who's and Simmons the only one that made it, and Lou didn't. What are your thoughts about who got in and who didn't get in?
Teddy, I'm so happy for him. Another Detroit guy getting into the Hall of Fame. Isn't that wonderful?
Yep, great.
What a great hitter Ted Simmons was. People don't realize he never struck out more than 57 times in a season.
Yep.
And I remember that one year when he was a kid with the Cardinals, he had 333 from both sides of the plate.
Yeah.
I mean, magnificent, magnificent hitter. And it's really, he should have been there a long time ago.
Yeah.
And of all the guys that are mentioned here, fellas, I'd vote for every one of them.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Tommy John, why is he not in there? 290 wins. And another guy, Jim Kott, who's not on the list, should have been in there as well. But I would have voted for every one of those guys that was on that list to be in, including Marvin Miller.
Let me ask you a question about the blacklist, that I call it. There were 106 people in the year 2005-2006 that tested positive for either drugs or enhancing drugs. Should those guys, if we ever have to vote on those, and they've never been identified except for four or five of the stars, Bobby Bonds and
Keith Hernandez,
Barry
Dave
Bonds,
Parker,
and some of those guys.
On, that, actually.
Those guys were identified. There are only about 10 of them identified.
Right.
Should anybody today be considered
for the Hall of Fame if they don't pass some kind of a test? I mean, I don't want to make this so complicated, but my God, we're keeping guys out, but we're not testing the guys who should be tested.
You mean like,
yeah, you know, that's a great point, Danny. It's a problem that they're going to have. How are you going to, you know, these guys were great players. Who's to say they weren't going to be great players,
right,
even if they didn't use the steroids? And I really don't know how much steroids helped certain guys, because I can name you probably 50 or 60 guys who had one or two good years on steroids, yep, but got injured immediately afterwards. And lost probably 6 or 7 prime years. Well, Canseco and McGuire are prime examples of that.
Right. And I'll tell you, I saw Canseco.
They should have been great. I mean, I saw McGuire hit 50 home runs as a rookie. He's a sure Hall of Famer. Right. Why did he need to take that stuff?
Right.
And Bonds, the same thing, and Canseco.
Well, I saw Canseco about a year ago at a card show, and I want to tell you something. He's still taking them.
Oh, yeah. I think he is. You never know if he's going to make a comeback something.
Barry Bonds was a great player before steroids.
Yes.
So was Alex Rodriguez a great player before steroids. Maybe
so why did they do it? It was so stupid.
Why did they do it? You tell me. No, I'll tell you.
I don't get it.
Tommy, go ahead and answer.
I think because other players were. And you're going to keep
up.
You
want that's exactly right. You want to compete at the same level as everybody else.
Right.
Yeah. Well, when you look at guys that were 165, 170 pounds, and then they turn into 240-pound linebackers in their career. You know, it's amazing that Barry Bonds, who admittedly, we know he took it, and Sammy Sosa, obviously, they lasted a long time. They didn't get hurt on steroids, not like the rest of those guys. I can't think of anybody else that had a full major league career without any severe injury. And, you know, there's guys tearing muscles off the bone. I don't want to mention some guys because I know who they are, but I certainly wouldn't, drop this on them at this point of their careers. But you knew. You walk into a clubhouse, you see boils all over their backs.
Right.
And, it wasn't just the guys. You mentioned 100 guys, Danny. I swear to you, there must have been 400, 500
easily.
Guys.
Easily, because everybody used them. But there was no testing going on. And I will tell you this, in several of the clubhouses, and this came from the players, several of the clubhouses knew a week or two in advance when the tests were coming.
It's so it's so pervasive. There was a guy in the Yankees named Shane Spencer, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
Shane Spencer took the roids. He was a minor league player. He pumped up. He had one good year, signed a big contract.
Villardi, too, with those Yankee clubs. Yeah.
There are those guys who how about the AAA players that didn't get a chance because the others took the steroids and got the one big contract. It's shameful.
Exactly.
But you still got to look at the whole
thing. And you just pointed it out. They only had 1 year.
That's right.
You look at and I'll give you another guy because he's had such a screwed up life anyway. Lenny Dykstra.
Oh, yes.
Right. Yeah, same thing.
Hey, Tom. He pumped up crazily. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. when I was with the Mets, I said, Lenny, I like Lenny, but I said, he might be the dumbest guy I've ever met in my life. And all of a sudden, he becomes a billionaire.
Yeah.
And, buys Gretzky's house and has a plane flying around. Then I find out later that I was really right. He is the dumbest guy.
But well, I don't think
But the dumbest thing he ever did was going on 60 Minutes.
Oh, my God.
But I don't think he was doing the roids back then. Because you were the Mets in 85, and I
he was small. He was a little guy.
Because I covered him in 86. I was in New York for 86 and 87.
Hey, fellas, can I ask Tom a question?
Yes, you may ask him just one question, though, Bob. Just one question.
That's all I get, one question.
Make it a good one. Make it a two-parter.
Fire away, Bob.
Bob, 10 words or less.
Tommy, we have an anniversary today as we record this show on Monday, December 9th, and this is not a pleasant anniversary. 42 years ago today, the worst thing I ever saw at any sports event occurred. This was the day that Kermit Washington sucker-punched Hamtramck, Michigan's own Rudy Tomjanovich, utterly shattering his face. Now, so my question to you is, Rudy's younger than you are. He must have grown up idolizing you and Hamtramck. How close were you and your brothers to Rudy? What's your relationship like now? Do you talk to him?
Well, I haven't talked to Rudy in a few years, but our paths have crossed. It was interesting. I played at St. Lad's, and Rudy was at Hamtramck High. Now, they had the Brisker brothers. I don't know if you remember Ralph and John.
John Brisker.
And they were fantastic NBA players. And so we had to play against these guys. And guess what? Rudy was on that team, but he didn't start. He was a sixth man. So what kind of chance do you think we had in that basketball game? When Rudy Tomjanovich is your sixth man in high school, I think they won the state championship that year. But Rudy was a terrific guy. I ran into him a few times when he was coaching as well as playing, and just a great gentleman. I'll tell you what, he was a great attribute to the NBA. One of the guys that you really gotta, you know, say, hey, he's done it all in basketball, and you wish him nothing but the best. And of course, he was a great All-American at the University of Michigan as well.
Let me ask you this: how much fun is it doing? Was it doing the games with Kenny Harrelson?
Oh, I loved it. We were together for 12 consecutive years, and I was still substituting there till the end. And being around Hawk was great. I learned a heck of a lot. And I don't know if they've done that Ford Frick voting yet.
No,
but
no,
not yet. I haven't seen it.
I want to play you something because I wanted to lead into this. I want you to hear it here. But we argued with Bob beforehand. Bob's got a legitimate point because when WGN was a superstation before all the cable TV came in, if you were a Tiger fan and they were playing the White Sox, you had to listen to Harrelson pumping up the White Sox. And so he had here's one of his classic calls plus when he got upset and was a real loudmouth fan. Go ahead.
That ball hit high and deep. Stretch. Get on back there. They look up. You can put it on the board. Yes. Yes. Can't get him. Oh, no. No.
He was safe at
first. No. No.
You know, we didn't have that. Now, did you play? I mean, you weren't like that. Were you the straight man who tried to bring him back to earth?
I used to egg Hawk on when he got a little bit mad. He'd get an umpire. One time, Mike Wagner, he doesn't belong in umpire. They evaluate the players. They don't evaluate the umpire. He went out this tirade for about 2 minutes. And then he went, these should not be in Major League Baseball. He's a disgrace to the game. Wimpy. And then he says, Wimpy. And I go,
That's Tom's nickname. Like, well, he's going to tell us how he got that nickname.
What am I going to say?
Yeah, listen, tell everybody how you got the nickname Wimpy.
Well, it was in 68 when I signed with the Dodgers. Tommy Lasorda was my manager in Ogden, Utah. And we had guys like Billy Buckner, Steve Garvey, Bobby Valentine on our team, and they were all high draft picks, and they all ordered steak the first day we went out to eat, and I ordered like a triple burger. And since it's only been 51 years though, Denny, so since I got this nickname, but you never lose a nickname. You know, you go from team to team, yep, organization. Now, somebody always knows who you are.
Absolutely.
But that was a glory. I loved nicknames back then. I mean, everybody had one.
Everybody.
And it was much more fun to deal with it.
And you just went through a series of names, great names. I mean, most of the names you've been naming here are great guys that you and I played against or played with. It was, there was some big-time history.
Now, we had another argument.
How about Willie Horton? How about my man Willie Horton?
Oh, my goodness. Absolutely.
He was one of my younger teammates.
I said, Willie, what do they call you? It's Mole Digger. What?
No, they called him Roids.
Well, that too.
Yeah.
Well.
I mean, or you either called him Roids or you called him Mr. Horton.
Why'd you call him Roids?
I called him Mr. Horton. One time, and we were teammates in Seattle. Remember Dick Drago?
Oh, yeah.
He grew up in Toledo.
Well, he was from Ewan Trout Creek, Michigan, and a hell of a pitcher for a while.
Yeah, he was good, but he was pitching against us in the Kingdom. And this was the catcher, and he hit Willie on an 0-2 pitch with the bases loaded.
Oh, yes.
So Willie gets an RBI. All of a sudden, we see Willie charge the mound. And he's beating up Fisk and Drago and the entire Boston team, as you well know how tough Willie Horton was.
he did. You know what?
I said to Willie, why did you go after Drago? He says, I didn't like him in high school.
That's right. Let me tell you something else about Willie. I think as I'm sitting here right now, the guy in this was Lynchburg, West Virginia, in the minor leagues, my last moment in the minor leagues. Willie got somebody threw a fastball, and I think it was Drago. And they hit the bottom of the bat, and it was like a 10-foot pop-up that the pitcher caught and started to laugh. He wasn't laughing at Willie, but Willie thought he was laughing at him. And Willie took off for the mound took off for the mound, couldn't catch Drago. I was dressed in street clothes, and I was told, you go get Willie, make sure he doesn't hurt himself. By the time I got to the clubhouse, there were four cops outside the locker room with guns.
No.
Honest to God.
Well, you know, Willie's, I'll tell you one thing. I wanted Willie on my side.
You bet your bippy.
Fight broke out.
I wanted two guys. I wanted Willie and Gates.
Gates, yeah, the Gator? Yeah. God rest his soul. What a good guy he was.
I don't know that a lot of people know this about you, Tom, but you were a hell of a football player when you went to the University of Houston from 65 to 68. You were a defensive back, and you were selected by the Dolphins in the ninth round of the NFL draft in 68. Wow. Were you thinking there's this greater longevity in baseball, or did you really feel you were a better baseball player than football?
Thank God. I wake up every morning and think, if I had played football, I don't think I'd be around.
Maybe.
You know, the concussion factor and the injuries and the soreness of playing football. No, and fortunately for me, Joe Thomas was the general manager of the Miami Dolphins at the time, and he made me an offer I could refuse. He offered me like $3,000 to sign and $15,000 if I made the team. And Dodgers gave me a $20,000 signing bonus in the fifth round. So that was easy to take. And that was when nobody was playing two sports.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I could have done it. If had I signed with the Dolphins, I might have been on that 72 undefeated team. But, you know, chances are that, you know, who knew what was going to happen. So,
well, I don't know if anybody's aware of it, but you do have a major league record. And you can finish the story. It happened in 1984. And that record was you replaced Ron Kittle in left field in the fourth inning of a game against the Brewers. The game proceeded to last 25 innings, became the longest game in Major League history, so they had to postpone it till the next day. You became the only player to amass five hits, most hits in a game by a player that did not start the game, and that record still stands.
Hey, how about that? Well, you guys don't know the real story behind that. In the bottom of the fourth inning, or at the top of the fourth inning, we'd all meet in the umpire's room, of all places, and order a Connie's Pizza. Now, I was in the room eating pizza with a bunch of the other Strabini guys that day.
That's right.
And the clubhouse guy, I don't know how in the heck he found us. He found me in the umpire's room. He says, Wimpy, you got to go hit for Kittle. I says, why? He's got a migraine. So I go out there. I strike out on three pitches. I think Sutton was pitching for the Brewers that time. I should have thrown my bat and helmet before I hit that time. But anyway, the game goes on and on for 25 innings, and I wound up getting five hits, and I just found out about that record recently. But what was interesting, too, about that game, guys, is that Tom Seaver pitched the top of the 25th inning and got him out. Harold Baines hits a walk-off the game. Seaver starts the regularly scheduled game and wins that, too. So Tom Seaver won two games in one day.
Wow.
Pretty good day. I did that with Ted Williams. I won the first one and lost the second one.
Hey, Tom, when I tweeted out your appearance on the show today, I got so many responses. They wanted to know about your nickname, Wimpy. Make sure you call him Wimpy. Listener Terry Paxis, one of your homeboys from Hamtramck, wrote, representing St. Ladislaus, go Greyhounds. Went there for grades 1 through 8, then they closed the high school. My whole family went there. But you made national headlines just a few years ago when you had the guts somehow to come forward and tell the world about the sexual abuse you and three of your four brothers suffered at the hands of a Catholic priest named Shirilla there as a boy. Do you want to talk about that?
How did you make it through that? How did you even have a life after that? Wow.
Well, it was really hard, you know. And you know, the thing is that, you know, you were raised in a strict Catholic family back then, and it's and, you know, today I think it's still prevalent, you know, as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, you feel a lot of guilt feelings because you weren't available for my younger brothers. But at the same time, I think we were all raised in the faith, knowing that the priest represented Jesus on this earth and, you know, whatever they say goes. And you know, it's traumatic, and it's something that you have to, you know, live with the rest of your life. And I spent many, many hours of counseling with it. And anybody out there that has been affected by that, I hope has gotten some sort of reward for it, some sort of compensation, that is. And whether it be monetary or mentally, But that is that's an ordeal I don't want anybody to go through. And then they got all these organizations, these mamble up things that say that these things are good. They're out of their freaking mind.
So what,
what they are, they those
say what
people.
Say what things are good.
He's talking about the national man-boy sexual thing that was
popular. Yeah. Yeah.
It was well known.
Yeah.
And it's a just a disgusting thing, and it's something that, they better get their acts together, because I'm not real fond of the Pope. I know this is a sports show, but good grief, they got to do something about these renegades that are still in the Catholic Church.
It seems like every week we got a new one.
Unbelievable. It's amazing that the Church has survived. But a lot of people who are Catholics and live, not being one myself, live by the credo, try and be the way Jesus wanted you to be, are separate from the Church itself. You can be a good Catholic, right, not have to deal with organized religion. That's where it's.
I agree with that 100%.
Tommy's 100% right, though. The priest was the man. I mean, if the priest said, sit down, run around the block, jump off the building, you did that.
And how they haven't been brought to justice and jailed
right.
and paid for their sins is really, really...
The reason I came out, vocally on this thing of many years ago was the fact that they had this Cirilla character was being transferred to be a pastor at a parish in Alpena.
Oh, my God.
And I said, wait a minute. If I don't do this now, I'll never be able to live with myself the rest of my life. So that's when that story broke, and that's when his career ended.
And that's not to say there weren't a lot of good priests, and there still are a lot of good priests. But boy, the bad ones, when they come out, it's just the ugliest thing you've ever seen.
It's not just priests, fellas. It's bishops. It's monsignors. It's even cardinals.
And it's not.
We're referring to all of them as priests.
And when you say a few, when you're dealing with a church that has 1.8 billion people in it, you're talking about thousands of priests. Yes, it's a small percentage, but it's still the damage is massive.
Anyway, oh my God!
Before we let you go,
damage has been done.
We had a little argument earlier, or a discussion, that Whitaker should be in the Hall of Fame for no other reason that he and Trammell, as Bob said, were kind of Trammaker. I said on top of that I thought Harrelson ought to be in the Hall of Fame, not just because of his broadcasting, which you could argue whether he was great or not, but he's an incredible story as a player with the free agency in '67, with insulting Charlie Finley, with the way he dressed, with the Nehru jackets. What they say to him? What did Sports Illustrated said? It said he developed a reputation as the game's best arm wrestler, pool shooter, and golfer, as well as being a man who played defense with all the finesse and surety of Venus de Milo, who had no arms, by the way. So he was a character.
Great character of the game. He
invented the batting glove. I remember reading as a kid that he wore. I said, "Why do you wear the wristbands?" He said, "Because they make me feel strong." I mean, it's great stuff.
I got one story about Kenny. Kenny, I don't know if he ever told you a lot of stories about the Savannah Inn and Country Club. And at one time, the Savannah Inn and Country Club was controlled by the mob, big time mob down in Georgia. And Kenny invited me down there for a 4-day weekend for a golf tournament. And by the time I got there with about $3,200 on me to gamble, and lo and behold, I left. I had to write a check for $1,000 to get the hell out of town. Now, if that's not, and you know what? If that's not Kenny, nothing is.
No. That's the truth. No, I think Hawk deserves definitely to be in that. The fact that he's a homer is. It's circumstantial,
that's
I think,
fine.
But he was a very entertaining announcer.
Right.
My I always liked the Harry Carey's, the Skip Carey, I think, should be in the Hall of Fame. And the guys that aren't standard, everyday, that sort of thing. The Vin Scully's is in a class by himself.
Yes,
but and the Ernie Harwell.
Oh yeah.
But then there comes Hawk, and as far as I'm concerned, is being right behind those guys as far as entertaining. Factor in the game of baseball, and I really believe he should be in the. And it'll be an injustice if he doesn't get in. Lou Whitaker, I think he definitely should be in there. He and Tram were just a great combination for so many years. And God bless Bill Mazeroski. I love Maz. He's one of my favorite people on earth. But if you put his numbers up against Whitaker's, they're not even close.
Not even close.
Right. Hey Tom, great talking to you.
He's right there with Sandberg.
Probably.
Yeah.
Hey, Eli is signing off. Thanks for, but I got to ask you this, as I ask all of our guests, because people want to know. Now, you're living in Atlanta, and you've been down there for a long time. You got a lot of family, your grandkids, and so on. Are you working, and what are your brothers Jimmy and John doing now?
Well, actually, I did two games this year. Ironically, they were still for the White Sox, and they were at the SunTrust Field here in Atlanta. So I got to do the just two games, and it'll vary. Sometimes I'll do 10, sometimes, and this one probably the lowest I've done. But I have announced at least a couple of games since 1988, and so I got a couple thousand under my belt. My brother John is retired, living in California, and my brother Jim is retired, also living in Tucson, Arizona. So we're spread out.
And John's got a book out.
Yeah.
Yeah, we talked about that.
Yeah.
I told him, I says, John, you know, when I put your book down, I just can't seem to pick it up again.
You already know the story. You know how it ends.
It's an immediate cure of insomnia.
Hey, Tom, great talking to you. Hope we do it again.
Great talking to you guys. Okay. Hey, call me anytime. I love this. I got nothing to do, guys. This is great.
Tommy, nobody has ever had a bad time coming on this show with us. I guarantee you that.
Oh, I tell you, I love you guys. I think you guys win some awards for this, don't you? This is really fun.
Yeah, we're still in our first year. What?
The show now is called The Three Assholes of America.
All right. That's Tom Petrick.
I like it.
All right.
Have a great day,
Tom.
Guys.
Great to talk to you. Have a great one, fellas. Yeah. Super. Appreciate it. Bye-bye. Yeah.
Anyway, that was a lot of fun.
Super. Yeah. You know, we had a couple people, I guess, on the show since we've been doing this. Maybe they weren't as good a guest as some other guys we've had. But most of the guys we've had, Tommy, they're just hysterical, man. It's just great talking to these guys.
Yep. A little bit of a long show today. Had a lot to talk about.
Great show.
And Tom Petrarch, very entertaining. So we'll see you all again on Thursday. Thanks for listening. This has been the No Filter Sports Podcast.
Thanks, everybody.